Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. As always, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. streaming live at richarddugan.com. And let's see, what else? We also have the podcasts. Did I say Mondays at 1 a.m.? I did. Podcasts are at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And let's see here. On SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitchers. We're working on TuneIn Radio. We're working on Spotify. Yeah, we're working on a lot of stuff. Let's see, what else? Oh, we're going to be linked to our guest website, and we certainly would encourage you to go to their website because I think that you would gain a great deal. It would assist in your evolutionary process, as I say, for the most part every week, and we certainly encourage you to do that. And let's see, what else? Oh, if you'd like to support us in the work that we are doing, you know, we would really really appreciate it. We have a PayPal link on our website that you can go to support the broadcast, and any amount is greatly appreciated. We're also on, I believe it's pronounced Patreon or Patron. Maybe it's pronounced Patron with an E. And we have some special offers there as well if you would like to participate in that regard. So please do what you can. You know, we're open to all support, energetic as well as monetary. We are not nonprofit, okay? But we're also not for profit because all we're doing is just paying for the program. And if you can help us with that, that would be greatly appreciated. You know, today's program is going to be interesting because today we're going to deal with an interesting topic, especially considering the way I opened the program today. We're going to talk about living an organized life. Wait a minute. No. Living an orgasmic life. There we go. Healing yourself and awaken your pleasure. Wow. I'm going to need all the help I can get to embrace sexual confidence as well as enjoy a fuller life. My guest is Janae Palette, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly today. Thank you.
Hello, Richard. And yes, you were perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. And it is living an orgasmic life, which is going to freak a few people out going, what are you doing? You're supposed to be metaphysical and spiritual. Well, guess what? I've been through a few things in my short little 58 years on the planet, and this is right up our alley, folks. It really is. I know about Shakti and Shiva. I know about, now I can't remember the names. Oh, my goodness. I can't remember the names. They're right off the top of my head. Lingam, and I can't remember the female.
Yoni and Lingam.
Thank you, Yoni. I was looking at the photographs that are in your book from Vietnam and Cambodia, which is kind of the focal point of what we're going to be talking about today. And I thought, wow, boy, I haven't seen those printed in or heard them. Probably since the late 90s, early 2000s, when my present wife and I went through some programs together, which were incredible. I mean, just the personal growth alone was unbelievable. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about intimacy and relationships. You have a blueprint and you have a guide to deeper connection. I think the one word, Janae, that really gets people, it just befuddles them, is the word intimacy. I mean, for guys, probably immediately conjures, we're talking sex, we're talking intercourse, we're talking commingling and all of that good stuff.
Right.
But for women, that's a whole nother thing. And so we've got, in a manner of speaking, would you say we have a sort of a communications gap or problem there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think women and men do view intimacy in different ways. You know, my definition of intimacy that I like to use is that intimacy is if you actually break it down into me, I see. Into me, I see, right? So to my definition of intimacy is it's neither it's really not sexual per se, but it's more in terms of being really open and being vulnerable and being authentic and allowing somebody into your space, allowing them into your energetic space, allowing them into your emotional space, and yes, allowing them into your sexual space as well. But all three of those really are interrelated and interconnected. And to me, that's how I define intimacy. And I think that what you're saying is really important, because mostly the way women, and this is broad generalizations, and I often get in trouble when I do broad generalizations, but I'm going to do it anyway with the caveat. But for most women, women need to feel emotionally safe and emotionally connected with a partner in order to be really ready and willing to open up to sex and sexual intimacy. Mm-hmm. And for men, men actually tend to go to sex for intimacy. So men are more like, I need to have the sex first where I can feel safe and I can feel valued or desired, and then I allowed myself to open up emotionally to a woman. So we are coming at it from different places, and that's part of the challenges that we have in hetero, cisgendered, normative relationships.
Yeah, it's gotten a little complicated, hadn't it, in terms of defining the relationship partners and who and what they are and so forth. And I have to say, I actually have had the opportunity of speaking with, I guess the term transgender, LGBTQ, etc. And of course, you know, we get into the conversation of pronouns, and I say, you know what, I have no interest in referring to you by these different pronouns. What is your name? Yeah. I will refer to you by your name. That's, to me, the height of respect. I don't need to go to those pronouns. I just need to know what your name is. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we can move forward. And again, there are those who are, that's where they're at. And okay, more power to you. I understand. But, you know, consider that maybe, you know, you're getting a little too hung up, maybe in one sense, on all the pronouns, and just tell me your name. What name have you chosen to go by? Not necessarily your birth name, because my wife's birth name is not her present name. She's had it legally changed.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I think that, and even on this program, Janae, that's something too. I want to make sure I get Janae Palette correct, because that's your name.
Yes.
You know.
So, names are powerful. They're important. I actually changed my name. I don't even write about that or reveal about that in my book, but I actually did change my name, and that was a very powerful transformation.
Let me ask you then, what does Janae Palette mean, or Janae in particular? And I mean, you sound like you're Native American born, and I mean, you were born in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you've taken on a French name. Why, and what's the, can we go into talk a little bit about that before we move on?
Sure. It wasn't intentional.
Okay.
As these things often aren't, but as I was transitioning my life from being a lawyer on the East Coast to being very involved in sexuality on the West Coast and doing a lot of education and training, I had a relationship with somebody, was a lover. He was from Australia. And he just started calling me Janae, and it was very sexy because, first of all, it had an Australian accent, and I loved the way it sounded. And I had never loved my birth name, which is Janet, and I never liked that name. I remember being 5 years old and like having different names for myself. I don't know why I didn't like it. Probably because I didn't like the way my mother said it or something. And I just love the way that name sounded. And I decided to try it out at a training for a couple of weeks. It happened to be a training on sexuality. And people were like, it's a beautiful name, and it resonates with you, and it's sexy. And it was completely different than Janet, right? It has a flow to it. My ex-husband's family is from France. So we already had the French connection, like in my mind, I had that French connection. Mm-hmm. And that's how I changed my name. And, you know, then I wanted to decide how to spell it. And I didn't want there to be confusion. And I didn't want to change the spelling significantly. And I just thought, well, what if I started my name with an X? You know, I'm going to be involved in sexuality. And I think that's unusual. And it makes a statement. And that's what happened. That's how the name change happened. But it was very powerful. It was very powerful changing my name. It really allowed, you know, my deep transformation. Like, that was kind of the final piece of it, because I really, especially leaving my life on the East Coast and coming to the West Coast, I really was able to start over as a completely new person, a new woman. I already had transformed into a new woman, but this was like the linchpin, if you will. And it was very, very powerful experience to do that. And I'm so grateful that I did.
Well, I know that not many people from this program know this. I unofficially, unlegally, for a period of time, went around being referred to by a different name. Mm. But this was back in Phoenix during those times when I was going through these personal growth programs with my second wife. And it was taken from, of course, as I often refer to on this program, my metaphysical primer, Autobiography of a Yogi. And the story about the tiger Swami, and the tiger's name was Raja Begum. Mm. So I took on the first half of that, and that's how I was referred to by a lot of people. And it felt good. It kind of fit, but mm-hmm. I never felt the urge to change it legally. Mm-hmm. Now, my wife has chosen to do so, and of course, everybody knows her name is Amrita. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Sanskrit for nectar of the goddess, if you will. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Google that, folks, if you don't know what that is. It's quite spectacular, let me tell you. But it's one of those things where, again, there's power in the name. We talk about power in words. And maybe we should start there, because we started with the word intimacy. There's great power, but, you know, it's interesting the way you described it. It sounds to me like men and women, they want the same thing. Because you mentioned safety in the context of describing what men are looking for, and then they use sex to achieve that. Mm-hmm. So men and women are really looking for the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not interested in, as the term goes, I'm not interested in performing. I don't want to achieve something necessarily. I just want to share the experience. Now, for a 58-year-old man, that's probably fairly normal, but for a 38-year-old man, probably not. Not so much.
Right.
So obviously, in one sense, in spite of the fact that I'm sure, as you deal with all ages of adulthood, as you deal with all ages, you see those different stages, and that you're not necessarily going to get a 25-year-old kid, a boy, a man, 25-year-old man, to take on that consciousness, if you will, of a 58-year-old man.
Right.
So how do you transition that for them? How do you help them to have the deeper relationship with their partner when that's biologically, in a manner of speaking, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, biologically, that's kind of where they are.
Well, I don't know if I actually really agree with that, because I've had a lot of clients in their 20s who I have worked with who really wanted to understand and connect with women at a deeper level. And, you know, I think when you really have a chance to sit down and talk with young men who have been raised on pornography and very gratuitous and sexualization or objectification of women, and you really have to sit down and talk to them, you know, underneath, they really do want relationship and they do want connection. They just had no idea and no tools how to get there, because they haven't been raised with that. That's not how we raise men, certainly. And so, you know, well, yes, their sex drive is different. It doesn't mean that they don't want connection and they don't want intimacy and they also don't want to be seen. Sure, they don't have the 30 additional years of life experience, right, that settles us and, you know, allows us to see, if you will, the forest for the trees, right? But that doesn't mean that they are not capable or that they're not interested. in deepening connection and intimacy. You know, I see this in workshops that I run. We just did a workshop. There were 22 people in it, and there were a fair number of people in their 20s and 30s. And, you know, they there's something really powerful about connecting with somebody and even just creating intimacy through synchronicity of breath or movement that changes the nature of relationship for people. So I actually hold out a lot of hope that we can all be educated around these, what intimacy can actually look like, if we're willing to ask the questions and if we're willing to look for help.
Okay. Well, I can attest to the fact that when we went through these programs back in Phoenix, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, you probably are familiar with this particular group, the Deer Tribe. And we went through some programs that were called the Kwadoshka. Mm-hmm. And we went through them only because it was very interesting how this came about. I knew the woman who was facilitating these gatherings, these weekends, and she wanted me to record them, audio recordings. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, sure, you know. But obviously, we participated as well. This was not just strictly, okay, I'm going to set up my equipment, I'm going to sit over here, and you do your thing.
Right.
So my wife and I learned an immense amount about not only ourselves, but each other and the whole aspect. And I grew up in a family that was matriarchally controlled, so to speak, or dominated. I had four sisters and a mother, and it was just me and my brother and my dad. And quite honestly, the way things have been going in this country in particular, we need that right now.
We do. Well, we've taken a little bit of a step forward towards what just happened in the last elections, right? The mm-hmm. most women ever elected to Congress, which is, you know, exciting.
Oh, not only women, but
and
also
minorities.
Well, but also the religions, different,
right.
Especially the ones that have been getting a lot of bad press for the last 18 years.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, the House of Representatives is starting to look a little bit more like what the country actually looks like, and
yeah.
look like even more in the next, you know, 20 or 30 or 50 mm-hmm. years. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. It is quite extraordinary. There's no question. And I'm grateful for that. By the same token, when I make that comment to other guests, they say, well, yeah, but here's the thing. It's not a question of, you know, one sex dominating the other. It is a question of coming to a balance, you know, and quite honestly, I think that's what, you know, you're referring to, too, is that there's more of a balance. Wasn't there? There was a race. I can't remember the state now. And as of this recording. It was Arizona. Then there were actually no males running for this particular office. I think it was a Senate seat.
Mm hmm.
So, there was guaranteed that it was a woman that was going to be sitting in that seat.
Right, that's true. Yes, not all the women who were elected are from on the blue ticket.
No. They're across the spectrum. There's no question.
Totally.
There's no question.
Totally.
I mean, and I have to tell you, too, that there are times when, and especially in my dating, which was my dating period, which was very short, I might add, mm-hmm. prior to my first wife, what I found so frustrating was, meeting women who were so damaged, and I started to become ashamed of being a man.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is ridiculous. You know, you guys are screwing up these women, and I got to pick up the pieces. And that's not what I want to do. I want to have a relationship with this person.
Right.
You know, and I did not know that my first wife brought a ton of baggage with her. And that's not to say that I didn't either. Don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. But at the same time, I was totally unaware, and I was confronted with this 10 years into our marriage.
Yes.
So forth.
But that's not uncommon.
No.
You know, it's not at all uncommon that, you know, as you start feeling more comfortable with someone, or, you know, as your life goes on and you get more settled and you feel more safe. Like, I don't know what her baggage was, but very often our triggers from the past come up more frequently as we get more deeply into long-term relationships. They don't tend to come up as much in the beginning, but as we get more comfortable in long-term relationships and we feel more safe and maybe more settled, some of those triggers come up because we may see ourselves and we may be experiencing patterns that we have from childhood that are now being played out in the context of relationship as well, right? So yeah. that's not at all an uncommon experience. And it's also very, very common with, you know, and this, I'm not at all suggesting this is what you're talking about, but since I work a lot with women who have sexual abuse and trauma, right, it's not at all uncommon that a lot of these memories are either repressed or you don't feel comfortable talking about them. And as you get deeper into a relationship, you really start getting triggered. Mm-hmm. And some of these memories will start to come up to the surface, primarily because you are probably feeling more safe. Right? You're feeling more grounded and you're feeling more safe and you're feeling more comfortable. And that allows the subconscious to release some of these traumatic memories. And also, most likely, I always tell my clients, like, you know, you can't force these memories to come up. And in my experience, they come up when you have the capacity to be able to process them and deal with them most of the time.
And that is true. And of course, I mean, I vowed with my first marriage it was going to be my only marriage. It was not. I wanted, my biggest goal in my first marriage was to, in a manner of speaking, not exactly compete with, but to carry on that longevity legacy that my parents have. Then, and they're in their 62nd year of marriage, I think.
Wow.
That's the number.
Wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah. And mine ended at 15 and I just like, oh, now I have to start over. I don't want to start over, you know. Well, what are you going to do? And so I've made it also the vow that I'm not doing this again. If this one ends in disaster, which I don't see that happening in any way, but we don't know what's going to happen down the road.
Right.
But, you know, I will not do this again. I'm not going to play that. It's just too damn frustrating. You know, but to start over again.
But also I think, you know, I'm sure your experience has been, as mine has been as well, is that, you know, you've taken a lot of lessons that you learned from your first marriage and have hopefully not repeated those patterns, made different choices, were much more self-aware, right? And so those experiences will allow you to go into the next relationship, hopefully, in a better space, right?
Yeah.
In a more self-aware space and making choices that you might not have made in the last relationship.
Jeanette Pellet is my guest. She's a sex and intimacy coach, author of the highly acclaimed book, Living an Orgasmic Life, Heal Yourself and Awaken Your Pleasure. And the website is powerofpleasure.com, Power of Pleasure. And of course, that also triggers a bunch of attitude because in like the 60s, for example, was, well, if it feels good, do it.
Yeah.
Well, there's a certain element of truth to that, especially in terms of what we're talking about. A, as long as you're not harming yourself or anyone else, and as long as you are not, well, I guess the harming is the best way to put it. You're growing from that experience, and then that actually can encompass a lot of stuff.
It can.
Let's talk about that attitude of if it feels good, do it, and help us to put that on a scale, if you will. How far are we going to take that from your perspective as a sex and intimacy coach?
Yeah, well, I mean, I take it all the way back to the beginning. If you think about it, like we were born as human, little human beings, right? As little infants, we were born to have pleasure. And if you would watch a little baby, and I just have a new little grandbaby, so I've been actually watching this, right? You know, you watch a baby, they are touching themselves and they're cooing with pleasure. And when they're nursing because it feels good, they're also cooing, right? They really only have two modes. They have pleasure and they have discomfort. That's it. Mm. And so that's what we were born for. We were actually born for pleasure. And, you know, the fact that we have so many challenges being free with our sexuality, being able to even say we deserve pleasure, which a lot of women in particular have a really hard time saying that we deserve pleasure, that sex should be for women's pleasure, not just for man's pleasure, is related to all of the messages that we received from parents, from our religion, from our schools, from our culture, that sex is something to be ashamed of, and that pleasure isn't even part of the conversation when we teach people around sex, when we teach kids about around sex. They don't even, you know, pleasure is not even discussed. So, you know, we have all of this, you know, and also as you saw in and you talked about in my book, when I went to Southeast Asia, I was, you know, just, it was amazing how many statutes there were of vajras and yonis, lingams, and yonis, right, the male penis, the woman's vagina, mm-hmm. in Sanskrit, because ancient cultures also embrace sexuality and they embrace pleasure. And so I think it's like the puritanical component, if you will, that's really put the kibosh on pleasure. So I think that's the first place to start. Like, A, we're supposed to have pleasure. That is a God-given right to experience pleasure in our bodies, both from sex and from other experiences as well. And I think that, you know, pleasure in so many forms is such an important component to us living a really healthy and long life. There's lots of research studies that are out there that talk about one of the, you know, I just saw one the other day, like, you know, 10 ways to be able to live longer. One was have a lot of sex, have, you know, have connection, have intimacy in your life. So there's so many, you know, actual benefits that we get from having sex, but there's also, and pleasure, but there's also the emotional piece of feeling more connected, of feeling more connected to our body. So I think pleasure is really important. And, you know, short of doing something that, as you said, that could harm somebody else, or it's non-consensual, like, you know, I think that, you know, we should be able to have a pretty long leash when it comes to pleasure.
And,
in my opinion.
Right. And what brings you pleasure may not bring me pleasure.
Totally. And that's important. Yeah. That's an important conversation, really important conversation to have.
Another a word we need to define, and it's in the title of your book, is, now in this case, it's orgasmic, but orgasm. And that there is a misconception that when the man ejaculates, he has had an orgasm. And that, if I'm understanding correctly, that is not true.
Right. So there's physiologically having an orgasm and orgasms and ejaculation for both women and men, because women, as you know, can also have ejaculate, are physiologically separate functions. And you can absolutely have an orgasm as a man without ejaculating. In fact, in the Taoist practices and in a lot of the tantric practices, there is a big focus on men not ejaculating, because the belief is that they lose a lot of their life force energy through ejaculation.
I've heard that. And to that end, I don't know. I heard this medical advice, if you will, for men, that one of the best ways, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the best ways to help ensure that you do not have a stagnant, if you will, sick or diseased prostate is to continue to ejaculate, whether it's with a partner or yourself, masturbating. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know about that. I think prostate massage is what's really important.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that most men are not actually doing that, but it's really, it's really, stimulating the prostate either with a finger, or there are these, prostate massages that, men use as well.
Mm-hmm.
That is what my understanding is. That's what really also helps keep the prostate healthy.
How about the phrase, if you don't use it, you lose it, so to speak?
Yeah, so that is very true for women, more so than men, because mm-hmm. of the way in which women's vagina starts to change, the pH balance starts to change when women are not sexually active, not having orgasm. There are actually hormones that are released in the woman's vagina from the vaginal walls, the secretions, that keep the tissue thicker and fresher. And while the tissue starts to thin out, and it does, vaginal atrophy is definitely an issue for women going through menopause. Often that can be helped with hormonal creams, like estrogen cream, sometimes testosterone cream. The more sexually active you stay, the less likely that the vaginal walls are going to start to thin out and sex is going to become painful. So there's definitely truth to that, especially for women. Good OBGYNs will tell women that. And even if you're don't have a partner and you're not, having sex with somebody else, just doing internal vaginal massage. So I'm a holistic pelvic care practitioner for women. So I do some hands-on work. And I teach women how to do internal vaginal massage, or using a jade egg or a crystal wand, which you can also use to massage the vagina, is very important for the health of the vagina. So it is important for women, especially, to try to stay active and have some level of touch in her vagina, even if she's not having sex with a partner. She can certainly have sex with herself. I'm a huge proponent of women self-pleasuring. Mm-hmm. It's very important for women to be able to know what they want.
Now, for women in their later years, in their seniors, post-menopausal, that's also a big issue as well. There are some women who they want mentally, intellectually, they want to have those relationships. They want to have those encounters. But physically and even psychologically, for because of the fact that they're not getting the same hormones that they were pre-menopausal, it's just not there. And yet they want that. And it really, I'm sure, frustrates them.
Yeah. And I think yes. But I think there's a little bit of a myth around postmenopausal women not being able to enjoy sex. I know a lot of postmenopausal women who are having great sex. And again, even if your vagina has been, if you will, out of use, for a decade mm-hmm. or more, it can be slowly brought back into a healthier state. So I do, I just think that there are some myths around that. And there are definitely ways, like using estrogen creams internally can make a huge difference mm-hmm. for women. A woman I know just said, like, oh my God, my doctor prescribed me testosterone cream. She's postmenopausal. She was like, I have a brand new vagina. That's exactly how she felt.
Hmm.
So I think that, there are definitely things that can happen. There's also, and it's quite controversial, I'm not a proponent of it. In fact, the FDA has had something to say about it. But, there are all of these new, like, vaginal resurfacing laser therapies, etc. So I do think that, I'm not a proponent of it. I think that it could potentially be very damaging to the skin, but some women have had good experiences, right? So there is some of that, going on. But the other piece I want to say is that, and I think this is really important, sex is not just about penis-vagina intercourse. And mm-hmm. I think this is part of the problem with the conversation that we have.
Yes.
In this country, right? Like, sex needs to be defined as so many other things. You know, my definition of having sex is anytime you're having an erotic connection with somebody. It could be that clothes are never off. It could be that you're having like really hot sexting, or that you're having phone sex.
Yeah, right? Be careful with those, folks, but okay, go ahead. Be careful, because if you're running for political office, you're going to run into some problems down the road. So be careful.
Totally true. But I think we really need to redefine sex about erotic connections. And yeah, sex also happens in our brain. So how do we stimulate the psychological component of our desires? And I think that's another piece, Richard. You know, in my experience with women who I see, married couples all the time, or people in long-term relationships who come and they say, like, we're not having sex anymore. The woman is often like, I don't have any desire. Sometimes the man doesn't have any desire. And there's two pieces around this that I look at first. Number one, 9 out of 10 times, she's not aroused enough, period.
Yeah.
Like, she's not ready for sex. And yes, the older you get, the more foreplay a woman needs, the more arousal she needs. So that's a number one place to start. And that's relatively easy to fix, because, you know, you just have to take more time and slow things down, and understand what you want, what your partner wants. And the second piece of it is that people aren't really getting what they want. They either don't know what their true sexual desires are. And I'm not just talking about the act. I'm talking about the emotion behind it, because that's really what the turn on is for sex. And we don't often go there. It's what plays out in our fantasies. It's what plays out in, you know, like some movie that we saw, whether it's a romantic movie or something passionate where all of a sudden we felt turned on. Like, we don't understand that. And once we begin to understand that, then we see, oh, the emotion that I really want to feel, for example, is being adored and worshiped. That's how I want my partner. That's the feeling that I want. Or maybe the emotion I want is to be seen, or the emotion I want is to feel like I'm being taken, right? So, like, once we begin to understand that a little bit more, then we're able to figure out a way to bring that into our sexuality and into our sex lives, so that more of our needs are being met.
Jeanette Pellette is my guest. We're talking about her latest work, Living an Orgasmic Life. Want you to heal yourself and awaken your pleasure. Powerofpleasure.com is the website. That's powerofpleasure.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Oh, welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I am Richard Dugan. Now, you know, normally I might sit here at the beginning of a segment, maybe the beginning of the program, and say, all right, I need to issue this disclaimer that this program contains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I did not do that because we haven't said anything that couldn't be played during primetime radio broadcast. There's nothing that has been said. Whatever is going on in your own mind based upon what we've said, that's yours. You own that. But what we have said, we've used all of the proper terminology, which is very interesting, too, because I know that there are some folks, part of their play, if you will, is have certain dialogue going on and certain language going on. And that's perfectly appropriate, as they say, behind closed doors. I do find it interesting, though, Jeanette Pellette, who is my guest and is the author of Living an Orgasmic Life, that... I remember back when a porn star was running for public office in Italy. I can't remember if she won or not. But the rest of Europe and the rest of the world was just laughing at the United States every time a sex scandal erupted in our political arena. Mm-hmm. And, and even in this last cycle, that popped up again, no pun intended. However, it was different this time. It wasn't that someone was having this relationship. It was the demeaning and degrading terms that were being used by men towards women. Mm-hmm. And this stuff came out. Mm-hmm. And in some instances, nothing happened. Yeah. And in other instances, they stepped down from their public office and disappeared. I mean, I haven't heard from some of these guys since they disappeared. We haven't heard any women who have been accused of similar situations. But as the phrase goes, men and women, the men are different than women and vice versa. And they express themselves differently in that regard. Now, that doesn't mean that that gives someone, you know, carte blanche to say the kinds of things we've heard over the last few years. And I have to tell you, I thought we had gone past that. I mean, in the 90s in particular, I thought somehow after Bill Clinton's parlay, if you will, and then the thing that really frustrated me more than anything else was the fact that instead of being impeached for some breach of oath of office or malfeasance or whatever, it wasn't even having anything to do with, if you will, directly the sexual relationship that he did or didn't have. He was impeached because he lied, because of perjury. Mm. Now, yes, it was about that specific instance, but it was because he lied. And I'm thinking, okay, so they should remove him from office. And then they didn't remove the guy. And I'm thinking, what a waste. You had enough on him to impeach him, but not to remove him from office. And I'm thinking, gee, that, you know, if I may borrow the term, that would, you'd think, would make a rather impotent president. Mm-hmm. In any event, I find it just really interesting that we have these just, I don't know, are they puritanical still in the 21st century, these puritanical attitudes towards sex and sexuality and who we are, as you kind of defined it in this way, correct me if I'm wrong, but as pleasure-seeking beings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that, you know, a couple of pieces around that. I think, yes, we still definitely have those puritanical attitudes. I think that, you know, my own experience, I have no idea if this is true, but my assumption is, had Bill Clinton, had this happened in 2018 or 2017, I think it might have had a very different result. And yet, you know, it's hard to see that domino happening because, yeah, in large part, you know, it was the chief harasser in, you know, in the harasser in chief now, who also really was, I think, responsible for the Me Too movement coming about as well, right? I think there were a lot of different facts that that all came together for that to happen, and I think we're less. I think there's a level. It's interesting. There's both a level of less tolerance for sexual misconduct, a lot less tolerance for sexual misconduct in the workplace. And you saw that with the Google walkout the other day, right? It says Google walkout. And there's still some percentage of people, particularly women in the country, who will just excuse it like they did with Brett Kavanaugh and say, oh, boys will just be boys, right? So there's definitely, you know, we still have this dichotomy. And I don't think it's about like the puritanical component as much as it's about there's been license to be degrading to women. There's been license to be degrading to minorities. And I think that's, you know, that's what we're seeing playing out in certain parts of the country. And I think we're also seeing in other parts of the country, in other situations, women really stepping up and saying, like, this is absolutely unacceptable. And, you know, this guy is going to be, you know, we're going to kick him out of office, or indict him, or et cetera. So, you know, I think when we look back on the world, if there is still a world in like 40 or 50 years, we'll probably see this as being a very, very pivotal time in, I believe, a very, 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 very pivotal time in our history for a lot of different reasons. But I also think we're going to see the more of the matriarchy coming into play.
To balance things out a little bit?
To balance things out a little bit, yes. To balance things out a little bit, that would be my prognostication.
You know, I thought, too, that the Kavanaugh situation, it was a lose-lose situation because, in this case, he was confirmed. Mm-hmm. Then every woman who has ever been assaulted, verbally or otherwise, or physically, now their testimony's in question. If he had not been confirmed, then the other aspect, the other side of the species, the other sex, men, we're all in trouble. The only saving grace would have been if he had stepped down. That would have been the only saving grace. And the reality is he didn't. He was confirmed. And it's like, so what does that say to every woman who has been assaulted verbally, mentally, emotionally, or physically by a man?
Yeah, it's a horrible message. And I know that I just read that Kristen Blasey Ford is still getting death threats. She's had to move now 4 times, which is incredible.
Good grief.
And it's a horrible message. And I think it also, even though we didn't have a good result, and we didn't have a good result, and there was no way we could have had a good result given the makeup of the Senate, I think it also did embolden and empower women to come forward. A lot of women came forward after her testimony, right? A lot of, and that's what women need to do. We also need to be able to tell our stories, and whether we can, you know, out somebody publicly or not out them publicly, women need to not hold this back and to let it be known. So yes, it was a very unfortunate result.
Believe it or not, we've talked about this issue before on this program briefly, and I was sharing with one of my guests, and she was talking about a situation where her book had to do with, I believe, if I'm thinking of the same, the correct author, who spoke about how the situation erupted around sexual assault of her daughter, and that whole process. I'm incorrect. There was a different author from India that we were actually talking with and talking about what's going on there and so forth. And I made the comment. I said, you know, and I got to tell you, as a man, I'm out there and I'm afraid to get near women anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid to, because for all I know, the next thing I know, there's going to be an accusation of harassment. And quite honestly, in this country now, if an accusation's made, you're done. You're guilty. Jeanette, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and being with us here. Jeanette Parrett, Living an Orgasmic Life, Heal Yourself and Awaken Your Pleasure. And if you should ever find yourself down here from Marin County, down here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And then I'm going to ask you very quickly 3 questions because I know you need to run.
Sure.
But thank you so much for giving us so much time. I greatly appreciate it. First question is, who is Jeanette Parrett?
Who am I? Great question. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm an educator. I'm a coach. I'm somebody who's deeply compassionate and deeply passionate.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to help normalize the conversation around sex. I want people to know that pleasure is their birthright. And I want couples who are in sexless marriages and unhappy relationships to be able to find connection and love and great sex.
And what is your life's purpose?
This is my life's purpose. My life's purpose is really to help people heal their sexual challenges and to find the pleasure in their body, to connect with their body, and to bring into their life the authentic, delicious, juicy relationships that they really want to have, whether it's with themselves or with somebody else.
Jeanette Palette, I thank you again so much for joining us on the program, and I hope we can have you back again later in this year to continue our conversation, because we could talk for much longer about all of these aspects. There's so much more to discuss.
Thank you, Richard. It was such a pleasure being here, and I'd love to come to Santa Barbara, so I'll keep that in my calendar.
Our door is open. We have an open door policy. Our door is open. Okay. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal. Because there's no way you can unprove it. You know, you can't, you know. And she said rather vehemently, welcome to the club. And I at first I was taken aback. Wow, easy does it, you know? And then I thought, okay, I hear you. Mm-hmm. I hear you. You're as mad as all of the other women are, and I don't want to make light of it in any way, shape, or form. But boy, I felt that I had been attacked, and I know it wasn't intentional. I know that, but still, that's kind of the way that it, and I have to say that back in the 80s, I was working for a Christian radio station, and it was just around the time that AIDS was coming on the scene, so to speak, in the very early 80s. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was, well, this is just the devil's way of separating the population, from keeping us from getting close to one another. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every few years, something comes up, whether it's a biological dis-ease, or what we're dealing with right now, that is designed to divide us. But it's always been stated, divided we stand, united we stand, divided we fall.
Right.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And of course, that's what we're seeing play out, right?
Yeah.
In our politics and in our gender politics as well. And, you know, I think that I'm of the belief that it's challenging to be a man too, and the Me Too movement has had some negative consequences for men as well. And I certainly see that what you're saying, that men are absolutely petrified, especially in the dating world.
Oh yeah,
a lot of men are just like, I'm done. Like, you know, if I meet somebody and I happen to meet them at an event or I'm introduced to somebody, but I'm done because, you know, I don't want to, you know, have some women out me on Facebook. And so, yes, I mean, there are, we have to figure out a way to be able to be in relationships with people. We have to be much better able. We need to teach people how to have consent conversations, right? You know, and at some level, men are being penalized for the fact that we had no consent culture. We had no consent conversations. None of this happened when you were growing up, when I was growing up, right? And, you know, we see what happens in the movies, you know, right? How there is no consent. And, you know, so men are being penalized for, you know, they are being held to a different standard now than what they were socialized on. And it's going to be a process for both men and women to be able to understand that and to try to come together, because there's no question that having a war of the sexes, you know, like we have enough, you know, divisions in our society right now. And of course we are having a war of the sexes, right? Mm-hmm. We have a war of white men versus, you know, it seems like, and not all white men, but certain white men,
right.
But even, you know, even like liberal white men are also feeling that, you know, put upon as well, because I'm in a lot of those communities and talking to those men. So it is a challenging time to be alive right now. It's a challenging time to be a man right now.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's a challenging time to be an American and
be
a human being. You know, look at what's going on outside. Looking out my window, I can barely see Mount Tam, right?
Yeah. Where are the alien abductions? I want to be abducted. Thank you very much. You know, what happened? Why did you stop? What's that?
It's sounding better and better.
It sure is, let me tell you. You know, I remember, too, I was 21, and I was going through one of these personal growth intensives. It was not intimacy or sexually based in any way. It was similar to EST, but mm-hmm. it was something different. It was being held in Phoenix, and a friend of mine had asked me to come back from Boise, Idaho, where I had been living for a month. She says, if you come back, I will pay for your first level. I thought, okay, what the heck? You know, what have I got to lose? You know, and it was the first one I'd ever been through. I'd never been through anything like it before, and it was quite extraordinary. One of the most frustrating phrases that was used was, that if you don't like being here, tough, because if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be here. But you're here, so you must want to be here. And I was like, okay, I can't argue with that logic, you know.
Right.
But I met this woman. She was 11 years my senior and a divorcee. We weren't supposed to have any kind of intimate relationship until 30 days after the end of the course. Of course, we violated that, and she was the first person I'd ever had any relationship with, any kind of intimate relationship with. And I remember coming home from spending the night at her home, and my mother came into the bedroom, and she says, you know, your brother and sisters are wondering where you've been. You know, what are you going to tell them? Mm-hmm. And even at that time, I said, I'll tell them the truth. You know, I've got nothing to hide. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it's consensual and so forth. I think it lasted 2 weeks. so that goes to show you that some of this stuff is wasted on the youth. There's a part of me. Yeah, there is a part of me that looks back and says, gee, there was an evening I had come by and she wanted to go for a drive. And of course, I coerced her into something else. And I'm thinking, if only we'd gone on that drive. It might have lasted a little longer, wouldn't have ended the way it did, blah, blah, blah. Certainly, I doubt very seriously we would have ever gotten married, but I often wonder whatever happened to her, how she's doing. Well, I'm 58, so she'd be 69, almost 70. I'm hoping she had a good life, because I have. But it's one of those things where you look back on those experiences, especially knowing what we know now, and it reminds me of that Rod Stewart song, If I knew then what I know now, you know?
Right.
But we can't, because we're in that process of growing, of learning, of evolving, as we talk about on this program. When people come to you, whether as individuals or as a couple, and they're wanting to begin that evolutionary / awakening / growth process, for themselves, because that's really where it has to start, isn't it? It has to start with self. It can't start with couple first. It's got to start with self. Where do you start them?
Great question. Depends on where they are in the process, right? It depends on how much personal development growth they have, how self-aware they are of what's actually going on for them and what's going on in the context of their relationships. But when I work with couples, I work with both partners, both individually and together. And, you know, and it depends on where they are. For example, you know, I've been working with one couple where the female partner just has a lot of childhood wounding that's never been addressed before. And she's never seen a therapist, right? So we're like starting at like step one, right? Just getting her to be aware of her triggers, just beginning to look at some of the experiences that she had in childhood that are having a huge impact on her relationship as an adult right now. And so, you know, I really, you know, there's no right answer to that. The answer is like, I take everybody exactly where they are. And I figure out like what needs to happen for this couple to be able to learn how to connect. How much do we need to work on some of their individual issues? And there's always individual issues to work on. And then how do we start to help them support each other as a couple? So it's really like a multi-factored and complicated process because every couple is unique.
Is there a scale that you are able to maybe use to place them where they are? But is there sort of like a gradient scale, if you will, where you say, okay, well, this person's, I mean, I'm going to just use numbers, who's at, and of course, what we'll do is we'll go from immaturity to maturity. All right. Those would be the extremes. And they're somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And you've got 1 through 10. And let's say he's at 3. And she's at 6. Mm-hmm. If he's at 3, you know kind of where to start with him in that process to bring him up to where she is. Or maybe it's not about bringing him up to where she is. It's just bringing him up, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really think about it that way. You know, I'm not a big, I try not to be a labeler.
Mm-hmm. And I understand.
So, like, it, you know, in my world, there's just a spectrum. Everything's a spectrum. Sex is a spectrum. Relationship is a spectrum. Where people are on their relationship scale is also a spectrum. So, you know, there's not a single answer because it's unclear what's going to happen. It mm-hmm. may be that, you know, a particular person is limited to how much they can actually, how much capacity they have to be able to grow themselves individually. And you know, and we have to work with what's there. We have to work with what's there. And maybe we need to, you know, find a place where they can meet in the middle, so that they can come into connection. Mm. So that's why when I work with couples, I can't, you know, I say, like, we work a minimum of 6 months. It's usually 24 sessions. and I can't tell you whether that's going to be enough or whether we're going to have to work for 18 months. I'm not like a therapist that sees couples for years and years and years. I don't believe in that. I believe that we can move through personal growth at a much faster pace, especially when we do the type of work that I do, which is much more body-based and experiential. I wish I could tell you I had the right answer for that, but I don't. I work very intuitively.
and that's wonderful. I actually couldn't agree with you more. I mean, certainly you can't compartmentalize it in that respect. I do understand that. I want to ask you something about... I want to start here. How can I put this? As I said, I grew up in a matriarchal setting, 5 women, 3 men. And I remember my first crush was third grade, and it was actually my third grade teacher. Gorgeous redhead by the name of Miss Thomas, which is why I've loved redheads ever since, probably. And I have always found the female form, and I'm probably not alone. Most men find the female form not only arousing, but gorgeous, beautiful, just incredible. I mean, in addition to what an unbelievable work of art, okay? To that extent, I was drawing back in my, I guess, mid-late 30s, the various parts of a woman in my sketch pad. And my mother and sisters came over to my house one day and started flipping through my sketch pad and came across these images. They weren't shocked. They were not, it didn't surprise them at all. What role, and I'm not even sure what exact word to use here. It's kind of a tough one here. So I'll use this one. What role does erotica, if you will, play in this aspect of relationships, intimacy, finding one's pleasure, power of pleasure? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I think the fact that you made a drawing is a beautiful thing. And, you know, for some people, it's interesting. For some people, erotica is something that they can relate to very well, whether it's visually erotic, you know, that, like, I mean, erotica includes porn, right? So for some people, like, that's really what they are looking for. And for other people, that's just not something that they can relate to, whether it's erotica through stories. So I think part of what this is about is, you know, everybody comes to sexuality from a different place, right? And it is, you know, some people are more visual So erotica is something that turns them on. And some people are more kinesthetic, so they actually want touch. That's what turns them on. And some people are more auditory. And so, like, you know, having their partner whisper hot things in their ear is what turns them on, right? So, like, we all get to define erotic and erotica in our own way based upon, like, what we really resonate with. But I love that you did that.
Jeanette, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and being with us here. Jeanette Parrett, Living an Orgasmic Life, Heal Yourself and Awaken Your Pleasure. And if you should ever find yourself down here from Marin County, down here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And then I'm going to ask you very quickly three questions because I know you need to run. Sure. But thank you so much for giving us so much time. I greatly appreciate it. First question is, who is Jeanette Parrett?
Who am I? Great question. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm an educator. I'm a coach. I'm somebody who's deeply compassionate and deeply passionate.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to help normalize the conversation around sex. I want people to know that pleasure is their birthright. And I want couples who are in sexless marriages and unhappy relationships to be able to find connection and love and great sex.
And what is your life's purpose?
This is my life's purpose. My life's purpose is really to help people heal their sexual challenges and to find the pleasure in their body, to connect with their body, and to bring into their life the authentic, delicious, juicy relationships that they really want to have, whether it's with themselves or with somebody else.
Jeanette Parrett, I thank you again so much for joining us on the program, and I hope we can have you back again later in this year to continue our conversation, because we could talk for much longer about all of these aspects. There's so much more to discuss.
Thank you, Richard. It was such a pleasure being here. And I'd love to come to Santa Barbara. So I'll keep that in my calendar.
Our door is open. We have an open door policy. Our door is open. Okay. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.